One of the things I hate the most in this world is when you eat a donut that's supposed to have stuff in it and you take a bite and there's no stuff in your bite. You
and then I mean? And then eventually way off on one corner there's like a tiny pocket the size of a pea.
Yeah, and it still has the butthole. So you can tell somebody tried to inject it because there's like the butthole with the stuff coming out, you know?
Yep.
But then
Scotch.
Hey everybody, welcome to episode 284 of Coffee with Butterscotch, the game dev comedy podcast of Butterscotch Shenanigans. I'm Seth and I'm the games programmer.
I'm Adam and I'm being warmed by the beautiful sun.
I'm Sam and I'm a sleepy man.
And this is a show where we talk about life, business, and working in the games industry. Today is November 6th, 2020. Before we get started, we have a warning. There's going to be swears on this show. We keep calling it a show, but there is nothing to show. It is purely an audio experience.
It's purely a tell.
But ooh, there's no good – yeah. There's no word for this, you know? You've got a radio show. You've got a TV show. One of these things is not a show. It's a listen.
Mm-hmm.
It's a – or like you said, it's a tell because
– that's all you got.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's an ear blast.
An ear blast.
We'd also like to thank our recurring supporters over at moneygrab.bscotch.net. They went over there and then we grabbed their money.
It's a good deal.
It's sort of a booby trap situation. You enter moneygrab.bscotch.net, you walk down a corridor and a skeleton arm emerges from a hole in the wall. And grabs your money.
It's very spooky.
Out of your back pocket. It's very spooky.
Yeah. We set it up for Halloween and now it's November and we just don't want to put it away.
We're just going to leave it. It's going to – we'll maybe put an ornament on it or something so that it's more Christmas
appropriate. Put a Santa head on that skeleton. Done.
Done.
Yeah.
All right, you guys. Let's talk about life. Let's talk about the fact that it's so dark and I hate it.
Mm-hmm. When you say that, but I'm looking at a beautiful sun – rise, sun. What do you call it when the sun's just there? There's a sunrise, you know, when it's like coming up. You're like, ooh, the beautiful sunrise.
I think that's just the sun. I think just, it's not.
There's a beautiful sun just like streaming into the windows. I'm basking in this light. I'm probably producing vitamin D by the gallon. That's vitamin D, right? That's the sun
yep.
one.
Oh, yeah.
The sun one.
Gallons.
Yeah. Gallons you of can, it. So you say
you can bottle that up and sell it.
I don't know. It's pretty nice right now in the moment.
Well, we had daylight saving, you know, this past weekend. The weekend was an hour longer than normal. Fantastic. Yeah. Love that aspect of daylight saving.
This is the part everybody likes. The other part, though, not so much, you know?
Yeah, then suddenly you come into work, and by the time you leave the office for the day, or in this case, I guess, Alt-Tab to a video game or whatever, which is now what leaving the office is, and the sun's down. So my wife and I have been talking like, how do we, because we want to like walk the dog after work. Can't do it. I got to do it over lunch break or something because it's just dark now. When we were talking earlier this week about this idea of just being like, what if just we didn't adjust for daylight savings time, right? Mm-hmm. So like the clocks change, but we just keep doing things at the same time. So we would shift our office hours from 8 to 4 instead of 9 to 5. While daylight savings time is going on, and then in the springtime, just flip it back to 9 to 5, so that our routine doesn't change at all. We feel no impact, but the clocks are just weird now, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, I've been waking up a little bit early.
We didn't do it.
Oh, yeah, I've been trying it out. I think it works relatively well, but it's weird. And I don't know. It's one of those things where like technically, it still feels like you're getting up earlier. Because it's not like I'm going to bed. I'm not actually going to bed later.
It's weird, right?
I'm just tired earlier because it's so dark. You know what I mean? I'm just tired for a longer period of time.
But the thing is, but you already were tired at that same time last week too. It's just that now the clock shows that it's 5 a.m. instead of 6 a.m. And now it's crazy that you're up that early, even though it's literally the same time
I think last it's week. For me, it's mostly that waking up is just the worst part of the day, you know, because like
it's the worst part of life.
Yeah, because you're in this great state where you don't even know the world exists, you know, and
and you got all kinds of wild, trippy shit going on in your brain.
You're living in an imaginary universe. Mm-hmm. Like everything is, you're cozy, you know, like
you're wearing a cool jacket made out of gummy bears.
Yeah. Descended to the spiritual plane.
So good.
So you're in that state. No rules, no limits. Cozy, warm, comfortable. Laying on a soft thing, covered in soft things, you know. Yep. All of a sudden, some fucking loud
None of that
thing,
is true anymore.
Yeah, it's like, get out of this glorious best part of existing and go step on a cold floor, you know.
Then there are rules. Now you got to brush your teeth because
– You notice your mouth tastes like shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because your teeth are constantly trying to fall out of your head, which you might have been dreaming about. But you got to scrub your whole body. You got to check your hair.
So I think it's really just that waking up sucks, right? It's just the worst. And so for me, like, it's not about early versus late or anything. It's always just how late can I get away? Like, at what point do I have to wake up, right? And so for me, daylight savings just like it shifts that by an hour, which then after a few days, like, is irrelevant again because, like, I'm adapted, right?
And, but that's fucked
and
up,
that's it. So, like, so I wouldn't want to wake up an hour earlier because now I'm not staying in bed as long as I can. Mm-hmm. Because I can stay in bed. It's not an extra hour. It's just closer to when I really have to get up, you know?
But isn't it weird that it's about staying in bed, not being in bed? Because, like, you could very easily, like, the second we're done with work, just go to bed.
That's true, but I don't want to.
Exactly. It's not about being in bed. It's about staying in bed.
It's actually not even about staying in bed. It's about not having to get out of bed. Because it's the leaving bed and going to the world. That's the bad experience. And so you're
Change
avoiding –
Change is difficult, you know?
Yeah. You're avoiding that step.
Change is hard.
Change is hard. No matter who you are, what time of day it is. Ugh. Transitions are the worst.
Yeah, but that's funny, right? Because it's not about like getting as much sleep as possible. It's about putting off waking up as long as possible, which is a weird thing to optimize for, but also it makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
So, but imagine though, everybody I know is like, "What's the deal with daylight savings? I don't understand it."
There's literally nobody who's into it.
It's very disruptive and I hate it. And everybody in the world could just be like, I'm just not going to respect this. And they could just stay on the same schedule, you know, go to work 8 to 4 instead of 9 to 5 once the clocks change, flip it back, just keep doing everything at the same times, just with the clocks off.
Are you saying we should start a movement? Because this sounds like a revolutionary sort of call.
How many people to rise up actually do daylight savings?
It's pretty sure
Canada. I know Canada does because I have gaming buddies up there, and I'm like, "Are your clocks fucked up?" And they're like, "Yeah, I'm so tired."
but Arizona,
so I know that,
right?
Arizona doesn't.
Yeah, it doesn't.
They got it figured out.
Does like the rest of the world do it, or is this just
I think it's just a North America thing.
Okay,
minus I don't Arizona. Know.
I'm pretty sure.
I don't know, but we need to start a movement, maybe called something like "Save the Day" or something.
Ooh,
like that.
That's good.
SaveTheDay.org. Come on over there, donate to our cause. Mm-hmm. Don't know.
Also, we don't know what's at that website. So.
We don't know if that's a real thing. So it's probably a real website.
If you're going to visit it, do it very carefully.
And know that we're not actually affiliated with it, and don't give them money. And you know, unless they're actually doing something good, in which case, I guess, sure, that's fine.
Yeah, but don't take our word for them doing things good. You got to go.
Yeah, we don't know who the hell they are. But anyways, start a civil disobedience.
Yeah.
By just carrying on as normal.
That it doesn't matter how dumb a thing is that we're doing. If we're doing it, we're just going to keep doing it.
Yep.
If life has taught me anything, like the more I've moved into adulthood and looked at the quote unquote adults, you know, making decisions and doing things out in the world, if you're doing dumb things, you're just going to keep doing it.
Just going to keep doing it. Yeah. Well, at least for a pretty long time. It takes a long time of doing dumb things before you're like, wait a minute.
Yeah. Well, that is the human condition. Right? This is all the we're talking about this all the time, right? Like, you have to suck at a thing before you can do it well. And you have to suck at it for a long time. And then even when you do it well, you're just doing it better than you did when you sucked more. You're still not necessarily doing it well, right? And now if you take that over the whole population, like, everybody has to be doing it at the same time, except you keep on injecting kids into that. you know?
And they're always doing dumb stuff. That's all they know how to do.
Yeah. And so like you just keep everything like in this steady state, right? Of never being able to collectively become an adult.
We can't all agree to learn from what our mistakes are, because we're all constantly making new mistakes.
Yep.
You know.
So daylight savings forever, I think, is the
I think we're trapped.
Yep.
Well, still, we need to think about it. We need to think about starting this movement. I think we just did.
Yeah, I've thought about it, and it sounds like a lot of work, and I'd prefer to stay in bed. So.
Well, no, change is hard, you know?
I mean, starting a movement is no big deal. Keeping it going is pretty hard, you know? Because there's like a certain minimum scale where it's like this. It's like kind of like the smallest team sizes too, you know? Like, there's a certain minimum number of people to get involved where you could still say, like, yeah, we started this movement.
I think, well, starting a movement is the same as publishing a video game, right? Which is, like, the product itself, which is the movement. Like, that part's easy, right? It's marketing it. That's the hard part.
Right. And so we could start it, and then just if it happens, it happens.
We'll just put it out there.
You know, and if it happens, you know, I'll send it to a link to some people, you know. I'm going to put it on my Facebook. Have my
friends join it.
And honestly, if there's like some glory seeker out there who's like, I want to be the face of this movement, that's fine. Like, we don't really care. We don't have a horse in this race or whatever.
No, every movement needs a champion. So we need to find some streamers. Some big streamers to advocate for this.
Yeah.
The problem is that young people don't vote, and so that won't help us really, because only young people watch streamers currently. Mm-hmm. So what are we gonna do?
But young people.
Well, it's not about voting. They are. They're always doing that.
They're always getting older. So this is the trick. You know, if you wait long enough.
Get the young people to hate daylight savings now.
Yeah.
So that in 20 years.
Adam, you got to play the long game with movement.
Got to play the long game.
Rome wasn't built in a day. You know. It also didn't fall in a day. It took like a long time to fall. You know, Everything takes a while.
Sam, you got some animal stories to share. I want to hear about this.
So I had the weirdest series of things happen this week. All of my morning walks. And it made me feel like I was sort of an apprentice druid leveling up my skills. Okay.
Sick.
Day one, find a bee. Okay. Like a normal ass bumblebee, just laying on the ground. But it wasn't laying there like dead laying there. It looked more like it was resting, but also it was cold as fuck because it was the morning time. And so I was like, I know what happens if bees get cold, which is they basically just slow the fuck down, right?
They're basically zombies, right?
Yeah. Zombies.
Yeah. So, if you didn't know this, if you catch a bug, you can just put it in the refrigerator. And it won't kill it. It'll just get really slow. And then if you're like worried about like handling it or whatever, then like now you don't have to worry about it because it's very slow.
Mm-hmm. Pro tip, if you ever want a bug, just put it in your freezer. Come back, thaw it out later.
Not freezer.
So this bee was just clearly very cold. And so I don't know what happened. I don't know if it had like, you know, maybe it had gotten a little cold, stopped for a moment, and like with hypothermia, right? You're not supposed to sleep because it'll get you. So the bee was laying there and I was like, I turned to my wife and I said, we have to save this bee. And she's like, why? And I said, well, you know, honeybees are important. I don't actually know.
Was it a bumblebee or a honeybee?
That's the thing. I was like, I don't actually know exactly what it is, but it looks.
Was it huge and fluffy?
It was big and fluffy. Yeah.
Yeah. It was a bumblebee.
So
we don't actually need those like for honey, but
don't
it is
ruin
still good.
My fun, Adam. Okay.
But we still need to pollinate things. Cause if we don't pollinate things, we don't have any plants and then we all die.
That's true. I like where your head's at. So that's where
you got it. You know, you got to get that bumble.
Save all the bees, not just the honeybees.
Get a leaf. Okay. Cause I'm still like, I know this thing's slow, but you know, stingers are stingers. So get a leaf, get this bad boy, pick him up, put him on a tree. So he's getting hit by direct sunlight. And then I breathe on it. Okay. Cause I'm like, I'm hot on the inside. Because I'm a mammal. I do.
I'm a hot man.
I'm a hot man.
Mammals, like the one thing about them is they're hot on the inside.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I'm going to breathe some of this hotness onto this bee and resuscitate it. Start doing some like, you know, just kind of breathe on it a couple times. Bee starts waking up. It's back beautiful. Its wings start like buzzing. It's just chilling, but it like starts sort of, it's almost like revving its engine. You know what I mean? And I was like, our job here is done. Bee friend's chilling on a branch. We leave, okay? That's day one.
Fuck yeah.
Fuck yeah.
Save that bee.
Saved a bee's life. Day two. Walking, again. Come across, not a bee this time, but a large caterpillar, okay?
Mm. A caterpillar at this time of year?
Exactly. And I was like,
that thing is toast. There's no way. Well, it's cocoon time.
I was like,
right?
You're either going to die, or there's a bunch of them that actually cocoon in like leaf piles, right?
Mm, yeah,
problem was, this poor feller had, for whatever reason, was, you know, in the middle of the sidewalk, and there's a bunch of leaves.
That's not a leaf pile.
Well, there was a bunch of leaves on the sidewalk, and I was like, if he cocoons here, he's gone. You know, he's going to be crushed. So again, I'll get a leaf. Scoop this caterpillar up, go nestle it into some leaves over by a tree thing. So that's a level two, okay?
Level two druid.
Next fucking
was it,
day.
Was this leaves on your own property?
No, this is someone else's leaves. This is like,
probably they're going to scoop up those leaves, put them in a bag, send that caterpillar off to caterpillar.
Well, hey, you know what? I did my part, okay? You know, I can't.
You did your part.
I can't control the whole chain. You know, I'm just.
Actually, on that note, this is a good PSA, which is you don't need to clean up all of the shit in your yard. Because a lot of that stuff is what you know, bugs and critters and stuff use to overwinter in some way or another, right? Mm. And so if you kind of let that stuff, not all of it, because you're not allowed to have your yard be a mess, right? And also it'll kill the grass underneath it, blah, blah, blah. But you can make little piles that are just for that purpose. Like we started doing that, and like the number of interesting bugs we've had in the yard has just exploded after –
Yes.
After giving them space to survive.
It's almost as if
Adam's druid skills are leveling up too.
Okay, well here's the big one. So then day three, waking up in the morning, giant bang. Okay. Bird collides with the upstairs window at Mox.
I thought maybe one of those mantis shrimp got in your house.
God, I thought it was gonna be along a bug line, but we upgraded suddenly. And so I was like, okay, I'll go check and see if it's in the driveway because it hit the window so fucking hard. Sure enough, go down, there's a bird, clearly like very rattled, completely in shock because it just slammed its face into a window at, you know, 20 miles an hour, however fast they go. And so I come down and again, using a leaf, first kind of cover it up because I was like, this thing's just going to be eaten in like 5 seconds if anything sees it, because it literally can't even hardly move. It was just sort of sitting there like panting a little bit, clearly like,
It was concussed.
It was very concussed. So I just kind of covered it in leaves, and then we went on our walk, and I was like, okay, if it's back, you know, sometimes they just get up and leave. So like, we'll see. Come back. No, this dude is very much not doing well, okay? So go ahead, come inside, get a box, put a towel in the box, put the bird in the box, and then let it just sit on the patio and just sort of rest for like 2 hours, okay? It doesn't try to even escape the box. It's just chilling in there because it knows it's been thoroughly concussed. And then finally, I went around at lunchtime, opened the box, and sort of like tried to shush it a little bit. And it went flying into the treetops. And I was like, I have saved 3 lives today, this week.
Or at least extended them.
At least extended them for the next like hour or two.
Which is nature.
That's nature. Nature's fucked up. Like sometimes the best you can do is just – it's just stave off the next 2 hours of inevitable death.
Yep.
This reminds me of seeing like every now and then you'll see a YouTube video of some parents who are like, okay, kids, like we're going to set this, like we have this pet mouse or something. Like we're going to set it free. And they like put it out in the yard and like immediately a hawk just eats it. Like, it's like, well, I mean.
The world is a vicious place. What?
Yeah. Freedom in nature is the freedom to be eaten.
You will be eaten.
Mm-hmm. We'll be eaten eventually.
Which I'm just so, you know, no matter how bad most things get, the fact that you don't have to worry about being eaten by things.
Well, you get to, as a human, you get to choose mostly if you're going to worry about it. Like you get to choose if you're going to go hiking where there are bears. You know, you get to choose if you're going to make yourself a target for being eaten.
A snack. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, generally,
that's kind of my
I choose not to be eaten. Yeah.
That's why the ocean still scares the shit out of me.
Oh, yeah, because the ocean, everything wants to eat you.
And everything's bigger. You're completely out of your element, you know?
Ugh. And it's 3D. Things can come at you from above and below and all directions. I'm more of a 2D kind of a
– Yeah, 2D's way better when it comes to not being eaten.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's get on to some questions. These questions come from our listeners over at podcast.bscotch.net. If you want to get your question onto an episode, just go there.
It's possible these questions come from people who don't listen. I'm just going to put that out
there. That's true, actually.
Because it's just an open
it would be weird.
Yeah.
But it's an option. So these questions come from people who may or may not listen to this podcast. We actually, before we do anything else, we have a comment from Fly Hoppy Axe Rampa, which is not a question. He says, I know that when Crashlands launched, you had people that wanted it to be more like Don't Starve, which is true. Mm-hmm. I recently bought Don't Starve on sale, and I wanted you to know that while I was playing it, I just wanted it to be more like Crashlands. No question. Have a nice day. Yeah, I mean, this is something that we kind of rant about from time to time, which is the propensity of reviewers to not review a game. This is players and professional reviewers. The propensity to review a game not for what it is, but for what it isn't.
Mm-hmm. And then specifically in relation to a thing that they want it to be, because there's yes. a what it isn't in the sense of like I feel like if it had this feature then this would be better of all. Yeah. I mean, that can be fair.
Right? Games are all existing in context with each other too, right?
Yeah.
Not saying that that's unfair, but the propensity to be like this isn't Don't Starve.
Yeah. Well, the one we were talking about recently was Genshin Impact, right?
Yes.
Which has been being touted by the press the whole time as like basically a Zelda clone, right? A
Breath of the Wild clone.
And it isn't. It's its own thing, but it takes place in an open world.
You can climb. There's a stamina meter. You can glide. It has a lot of mechanical.
Did you say a salmon emitter?
Stamina meter. I may have said a salmon emitter. Write
that down. Crashlands 2.
Salmon
emitter. Write that down. Salmon emitter.
I mean, we're doing a lot more sort of event-based programming in Crashlands 2. So we could have a salmon emitter. I don't know what that means.
Well, we can't have salmon, though, because that's a real fish, and there's trademarks on that.
Let's call it Malson. Have some Malson.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or it can be salmon, S-A-M-M-I-N.
Salmon.
Salmon. That is how it's pronounced.
Anyways, what were we talking about?
Genshin Impact and how everybody was like –
Genshin Impact.
Everybody basically – they start off the review being like, oh, thank God, a clone of this game that I love. Oh, it's really not that game though. It's its own thing. Oh, I'm so pissed off about that. Right. And that's basically how all these reviews went. So I was seeing that from the outside. Of course, Genshin Impact did fucking great. And so – they've got nothing to worry about, but part of their strategy was all about messaging and trying to make sure to the best of their ability that people weren't just saying, oh yeah, this is just this other game, only a version I don't like because it's not the same. This is the thing that everybody has to deal with all the time, which is
mm-hmm. Yep.
You only understand things relative to other things. That's just how that works.
And if you like the thing.
Yeah, and if you like the thing that you're comparing this other thing to, then all you can see are its quote-unquote deficiencies, right? Which to you now, a deficiency is like a thing you like from this thing that this other thing does not have. Even if in context, it doesn't need that thing to still be just as good and whatever. So, yeah, it's an aggravating problem.
And I think especially when two games in this particular sense look alike in any sort of way. So in the case of Genshin Impact, it is very true that Genshin Impact uses a lot of the same rendering style and the same color schema as mm-hmm. Breath of the Wild. So it's not
– it invites a lot more
– Yes, it invites direct comparison. And the same way that – which we were actually surprised by with the original Crashlands, because it has so much color in it. I didn't think it looked like Don't Starve.
Animation style is completely different. Art style is completely different.
Yeah, but – but from like just a general person's kind of like glancing at it, apparently it does totally read as like kind of similar, largely due to the black outlines. And so that was 100% one of those things where you can also think about when you're making your own game or working on any product that exists in a space like this, there's this idea of differentiation, like basically visual differentiation to try to push yourself so you're not competing directly with a thing. But also sometimes it's useful to be able to borrow the people from – so for example, in the case of Genshin Impact, it has a lot of those open world elements as like the same ones as Zelda does, Breath of the Wild. So at the same time as like they need to not be a clone of it and make that clear, it is also extremely useful from a marketing standpoint for them to borrow the style because it speaks the same language, right? So people who played Breath of the Wild were like, this is great, would look at this and be like, I wonder – if this is the same level of greatness,
you know? Well, it's a very difficult line to write.
Really hard.
Which is you need enough similarities to existing things that people get it, right, and that you can establish your thing as being the kind of thing that people would want because it's like thing. Because you can only know that you want something if it's like something you've had before. Otherwise, you couldn't even guess that you would want it, right? And so you gotta somehow thread that needle where it's like similar enough that people know they want it, but different enough that it doesn't invite perfect pairwise comparison yes. between the other things.
It's hard.
It's impossible, honestly.
But that's okay. I mean, it's like I said, it's just human psychology. Yeah. There's no all that we can ask is that if you are reviewing a game, that you consider what your bias points are. And what your
yeah, and it's, it, I mean, are, it is perfectly know? Fine to compare two games to each other, right? Because that's a way yeah. that you critique things, right? That's completely fine. The trap that you fall into is where you don't realize you've just decided that you want this other game to be the same game,
right?
And like, and so that all that you can actually see in that context is this thing is just worse, right? Because all the things that I like about this other game are not here. As a
which just means that it's a different game. Yeah. All right. So our highest upvoted actual question comes from Level Headed, who says, how does the revenue system work for partnerships like putting Level Head on Xbox Game Pass? Is the payment substantial or low but makes up for it in advertising? Did you think that the rise in popularity of Game Pass type subscriptions will go the route of Spotify, giving devs a platform, but overall reducing the dollar amount that makes its way to the game devs?
So we can't say anything specific about like, here's what Xbox did, because that's all, you know.
Yeah. All we can say concretely is that it's probably specific to each deal.
It is, yeah. There are some – we can talk about the trends that these things fall into, right? Which is if this is specifically about subscriptions, then what we have seen either in negotiations or hearing from other people or things we actually ended up with or whatever, what we've seen out in the wild.
Yeah, these things have been written about in games industry and stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, are basically your typical styles are a pure revenue share model where basically the subscription is bringing in money from all of its subscribers. And it will say basically X percentage of the revenue coming in will be distributed across the games that are in the service. And then exactly how they're distributed depends on, again, on the service. And so sometimes it's basically negotiated ahead of time. So you'll just get some percent and that's it. Mm-hmm. That one seems pretty rare. A lot of it seems to be based on like gameplay time, bounce rate, and like some sort of like algorithm they put together to get a sense of like how valuable is this game to our portfolio, right? Mm-hmm. In those scenarios, they don't tell you as the developer or publisher putting a game in there what that breakdown is because they don't want people to game the system.
Right. And so you don't actually know.
Being honest, you don't know what you're going to get.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they don't know how much money is in the system because they don't tell you that either.
Mm-hmm. So like, just make a really good game that people play endlessly and it'll all work out. And you're like, yeah. Okay.
Yep. Okay.
Generally, yeah, it's pretty opaque.
Yep. It's very opaque.
Generally.
Yeah. So that's one side of things and actually seems to be kind of the typical model for most of the both old and new subscription services is you're basically just like with any launch, you're just gambling on there being enough people and money in the pool that it's worth it for you to be on there. And then you hope that you have a game that can compete for eyeballs in that ecosystem. Mm-hmm. So another model is upfront payment where you'll just basically pay, you just basically get a licensing fee where they just pay you to say, we want permission to give this game to our users for free to them, right? And they just pay you a lump sum, that's that. And then outside of that, they're basically combinations of those things where it's maybe some lump sum, maybe some revenue share. All the details depend on the specific mm-hmm. contract, and our experience so far has been that the deals that we got were likely not exactly the same as the deals that other people got because we negotiated all the details and worked with that partner to find something that worked well for us, worked well for them, and everybody was happy about it.
Yeah. So far as like how this compares to something like Spotify, I think the major difference when you're talking about music in particular. Is that in the case of this mixed model where you say, okay, in dealing with X platform, we're going to do some – there's an upfront payment and then there's, say, a revenue share or some bonus structure or something like that in post so that if your game does really well, then you're still able to capture some of that value. I think the thing that's really interesting to me about stuff like Spotify is that they don't pay a damn cent from what I understand to have your music on the service.
They actually do.
Do they?
Or yeah. So if you're a rando music person, like just like if you're not if you're not a big name, if you're not under some sort of a big publisher or whatever, right? Yeah, you're basically, if you want to, you can put your music on Spotify. You don't have to, right? Because you don't have to do anything with your copyrighted materials. So if you want to, you can put it there. And then the default is that you're just basically getting
the streaming revenue from that.
Getting that streaming revenue, right? Yep. But it's sort of like, it's similar to like YouTube or Twitch, like all these things, right? There's like the default behavior is you're getting some cut, which might be, I think on Spotify, it's a per stream, I think.
Yeah.
But it could be a share model where it's just like, we don't know what it is per stream because it depends on how much money is coming in and how much stuff people are listening to or watching or whatever, right? That's actually more typical. But in those cases, like we've seen at Twitch, $1 million deals, right? For certain streamers. So the experience that a normal streamer has, your average streamer, is not the same at all as the ones who are bringing in lots.
Because those are also typically exclusives, which is to say, we'll pay you this much money to only stream using our platform.
And Spotify is the same thing because there's a whole bunch of Spotify exclusives now, like for podcasts in particular, but not so much for music, but there's a little bit of that still too.
They bought the Joe Rogan podcast for $100 million.
Exactly. And so that's typically, again, following that model where either, because we don't know behind the scenes what the full, appearance of that, mm-hmm. that deal is. But exclusivity is that key token that's actually moved in a lot of this, which is usually if you're being paid a lump sum for a licensing fee, it's going to come with some strings of some sort. That's in like the current games market, that's typically exclusivity is what people want, but it isn't necessarily. It could be things like, we need to make sure that you have X number of languages covered and that you'll sim ship with other platforms. Mm-hmm. Like there could be any number of requirements that come along with that money.
Yeah. I mean, in the case of something like Game Pass, where one of their big focuses has been getting games on day one as opposed to like later. So, and you can think about that as far as that idea of putting your game into a subscription service on day one. I mean, if you asked someone to do that like 4 years ago, they'd be like, fuck no, like absolutely not.
Wouldn't want to do that without knowing that you're going to get paid for it. Because basically what you're saying now is like, because it feels like you're devaluing your game by just basically saying, oh yeah, if you want it, you can just have it. Mm-hmm. I'll get a random amount of money from this publisher, right? And now who's going to buy it is kind of like where your mind is going to go, right? Yeah.
So I think as far as where things are trending, I guess I think about where games are going in the subscription sense more so like how Netflix operates, because the overall cost to produce and market a game is so fucking high compared to like a single music track once you're in, of course, high production tier stuff for music, it's very, I'm not saying it's not expensive, it doesn't take a lot of time, but it's a different order.
It wouldn't take like 500 people 4 years to make a
$1 billion. Yeah,
it's not a single album.
And so where I think this is going is more along the Netflix side of things, where I think subscription services are going to be more and more prevalent. I think you're already seeing this. More of them have popped up in the last year.
And Netflix uses a licensing model, right? Just a pure, there's no revenue share. It's just a pure, we're going to pay you this amount for this amount of time on the platform.
Yeah. And then I believe, of course, if you get a season two or whatever else, then I mean, now you have leverage because you have a thing that they want.
Although that might have already been part of the deal, right? Which is it's mm-hmm. When it comes to something like Netflix, like not that much stuff comes out on Netflix. It's like a dozen things a week or whatever, right? It's not that, or maybe more than that I just don't see because I assume everybody sees different stuff, right? But it's not a ton of stuff. And it's a low enough amount that they can negotiate a deal per thing that's coming through, mm-hmm. right?
And so I think what's interesting about this is you move into a space where devs have to shift their focus from selling broadly to individual players and trying to say like, yeah, we're going to try to make, 100,000 sales or whatever else, to saying, to actually almost a B2B model, a business to business model, where you're saying, okay, we have this really good game that we're like pretty sure people are going to love. But because of the current state of how the industry works, it's far more energy efficient and smarter for us as a dev studio to be able to talk to our platform partners and essentially sell it to them first and foremost, and sort of most importantly, because they can provide a floor that regular gaming people can't. And so it suggests sort of an interesting, a vertical integration on some sides of the market where as far as any one of these platforms is concerned, I know like Microsoft bought up some more studios in the last 6 months or so. And I am wondering if there's going to be a bit more consolidation in that regard because of this, the subscription model and how all these things work. But
Well, you see this with Netflix, right? It's like Netflix is producing more and more of its own shows, right?
Exactly.
So instead of paying a licensing fee for some third-party content, they're just going right for making their own content instead.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Which isn't necessarily a safer model, right?
No. But, well, you have this problem in entertainment. I mean, it's there in a lot of things. I think it's especially volatile in the entertainment industry, which is that past performance is not indicative of future performance, mm-hmm. right? And so if you buy a studio because they've made a great game that was super popular, the probability of them making another super popular game is very hard to predict, mm-hmm. right? And oftentimes, so like the creators of, Fall Guys or Among Us or whatever, like, are they going to make another game that does incredibly well? Don't know.
Well, the creators of Fall Guys have made hundreds of games, like literally right. hundreds of games.
And none of them hit Fall Guys.
Yeah. Level, can you think off of your head what of the games that they made? Like, can you just.
Nope. I didn't even know they made other games. I think it's the thing. Yeah. I think it's.
Yeah. And so you have this. Well, you have this longer term interesting trend with streaming services and things like this, which is. And this is what you saw this with Steam and with things like the App Store and whatnot, which is the platform that greenlights things, like decides what's going to be on their platform and what's not. They learn over time that every now and then they will find a hit, but they have no way to know what those hits are going to be. So instead, they go for volume. Right. It's like get as many things onto our platform as we can, as long as they meet some bar of quality, at least at first, so that the likelihood of us having the thing that's a big hit goes up and up and up. And what you end up with then is over time, the value of the platform tends to deteriorate because it's harder and harder to find the things that you want. And then people start to diverge and wander off to other mm-hmm. services.
And it's harder to get visibility if you're one of the ones trying to get a hit right on the platform. Could have been a hit, 5 years ago, your competition is now so high because being a hit is all about visibility, right? It's all about people knowing the thing exists, it getting right hands, getting a few champions, like the whole, that whole process. And it's just the harder it gets, the less likely you catch onto those parts of the flywheel that get it spinning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's even to the point where, looking at Netflix, they're becoming notorious for canceling shows after a season, right? They'll fund a show, they'll put it on. And that's it. And it's even to the point where Netflix is issuing a huge number of junk bonds, to pay for these shows. So Netflix is building up tons and tons of sort of like trash tier debt, where they borrow tons of money, basically saying like, we'll pay this back if the show works. And if not, then we'll consider this bond non-repayable, right?
Well, I think this business-to-business point, though, is like that's the key difference, right, in approach. Because this is also true for like for the Netflix approach, right, which is they're not selling us Tiger King. Right. That's not what Netflix is doing, right? They may be like trying to sell investors on like the junk bonds part, right? But which is also really a business to business thing. But they're not selling shows. They're actually not.
They're selling Netflix.
They're selling Netflix the service, right? Yes. So they have to maintain a high enough value proposition for the service that people don't at some point be like, oh, I haven't seen anything on here for any good for a while.
Or
it's all the same. I'm just gonna cut the service.
Which means you need constant new content.
And you also and good enough content.
Right. Yeah. This is also why subscription services are one of those things that for a lot of game devs in particular feel like it should provide a good grounding and a good base for, essentially just games that are a little bit different or that don't necessarily have, say, that aren't built to keep you engaged in the way that a modern sort of gaming experience is, which is generally you're targeting, hundreds of hours of play now in terms of game you bring to market. And so you can make these experiences that are just that are meant to be done and done, like a 10-hour thing that's just ridiculously good or whatever else. And in the context of a subscription service, as long as you're not as the service, you're not viewing the value of a game strictly on its ability to sink someone's time, then having those other games present means that people will be on your service overall for a longer period of time because they have different options, right?
Yeah, and that's like what people think. But that's not the reality, right? Because we've already seen this with Apple, because Apple actually publicly said with their Apple Arcade that they were going to be changing their approach to what games they brought on and that stuff. And
well, it's true. Xbox is very staunchly not taking that maneuver, right? Because they're saying, yeah, we know that certain games don't quote unquote perform as well, but they essentially, the idea is that they have a place inside of a larger repertoire. And I think it really comes down to like when the payout for a game is so strictly tied to those engagement metrics, which is basically where the weird shit gets in games. Because think about like a Netflix. Like I don't think Netflix doesn't pay the individual screenwriters and actors based on how many people watch their show every day. I don't believe. I don't think there's like a.
I'm pretty sure it's entirely a licensing model. I don't think there's a
a one size fits all.
Yeah, well, I know licensing is in like. I know like all the deals that I actually heard about with like any detail whatsoever was, oh, Netflix paid X amount of dollars to have the rights to stream this thing for the next 2 years or whatever. Right.
Right.
Like that seems to be, and it's possible that, of course, because we don't know the details, it's possible they have more, you know, boutique licensing agreements for different shows. But it seems like they're at least for the stuff that's public, like there's only been one model, which is, pay a whole bunch of money, negotiated, right, and then get the rights for X amount of time. And so, yeah, so it's independent of the number of users who actually view it. But that seems to be the model for third-party content that already exists, right, that has already been in some market somewhere with some known amount of success. And, like, that's what Netflix is paying for its own shows. It basically just writes a check to some entity who then goes and, like, makes and produces the thing and then gives it to Netflix when it's done.
Yeah, so like, I think so that's where the rub gets, right? Yeah, because like depending on which one of those models you're using, then you actually have very different – you have two very divergent interests in terms of how you build your subscription. And I know for some devs, like it seems like the B2B side of this is somehow more daunting than selling it to players, but it's not. Like
it's way better.
It's honestly it's far better because oftentimes you just need to crack into one place as opposed to like – shouting into the void of Twitter and Reddit and everything else.
Yeah, it's not exactly easier. It's not easier to get your foot in the door because you still got to find the people. You got to talk to them. You got to get them to believe that like you can produce and the whole thing. But I think the key to it though is that a game's ability to succeed in the broader market of players, right, is somewhat independent of how good it is conceptually, how well it's produced, and so on and so forth. Right, it has to be good, but just because it is doesn't mean it's going to be successful in the broader market. So when it goes business to business, like just in the same way we can't predict if a game will actually succeed in the player market, the businesses that we're talking to also can't, right? But they can evaluate the thing that we make the same way that we can, which is they can tell if it's good. They can tell if there's a niche for it, if it's the kind of thing that like people should want, like all that kind of stuff, right? They can tell all of that. And so as long as we're making a thing of high quality, we've done our own sort of survey of what we think is available in the market, we know what our target platforms are, like all that kind of stuff, then selling to a platform is actually the same as selling to ourselves in the sense of like convincing ourselves that this was a wise thing to invest our time into is the same problem as convincing a platform that it's a wise thing to invest their money into. But convincing players to do it, to buy your game, is fucking impossible.
Because nobody knows. What's going to work there?
No, there's just no way to know.
Yeah, so it's easier to just negotiate with someone who can reason their way through it the same way you did.
Yeah,
you know, being like, yeah, I could see this just taking off. I could see people liking this.
Well, and I think that for me, the big takeaway, you know, without any details from our experience with Levelhead and getting it onto a few subscription services and having just much closer relationship with the platforms at launch was that moving forward, much prefer the business-to-business model of coming with a licensing deal, knowing at least at a minimum how much money is going to come in.
That's the big one. Like being able to say like before a launch happens, like, okay, we'll be fine.
Yeah.
We
knew 6 months before we launched Crashlands how much money minimum we were going to have from Xbox. Like we knew that. We just got to know that, right?
Yeah. Levelhead.
Or for Levelhead, sorry. Yeah. We just got to know that. What did I say?
It's a crash.
Yeah. Oh, right. Shit. Okay.
It's like, what a relief, you know, as a dev, you know, if you've been working on something for a year or 2 years and then to just know that at least to some degree, as long as you can get this thing across the finish line, that you won't be like destitute.
That there's some money coming
in. Yeah. I mean, that's super handy.
So who knows what these things are going to look like in the future? And I guess the short answer is there's like 1,000 different possible ways that these things could be.
They will, and so many of those are new too, because Game Pass has been around for a little bit, but not that long, and they'll presumably be changing their model as they adapt.
There'll be new services.
Google Play Pass, basically just launched last year, mm-hmm. right? And of course we have our deal with them. But I can't imagine that when we come to talk to them about Crashlands 2 potentially, right, a few years from now or whatever, without a doubt, their server's going to look different. The people in charge are going to be different.
Context
the
changed.
Deals they're doing are going to be different, and it may be better, maybe worse. There's no way to know. And so we're not, I guess, the short of it is we're not banking on being able to sell Crashlands 2 into subscription services successfully. Mm-hmm.
It will be nice,
or whatever. But if we can, that would be the ideal. move.
Yeah. All right. Next question comes from Biggie Bapa Boop, who says, "What would be the best thing to find in the middle of a cupcake, and what would be the worst?"
I feel like there's too many degrees.
Yeah. There's too many worst things.
I don't even want to think about that.
Let's not even go there.
You know, it's been a week. I'm not thinking about gross things inside cupcakes.
I know. Well, here's the thing. The worst thing to find in the inside of a cupcake would be an endless dark void that consumes all knowledge of cupcakes.
That seems fine, honestly. Mm-hmm.
So you'd get in there, you'd be like, "Oh, I'm gonna have this cupcake," and then boom, nobody's ever heard of cupcakes.
Nobody knows this thing. You're like, "What the hell is
and
this?"
And no matter how hard you look at it, you just can't figure out what it is.
Counterpoint. You know? That's the best thing you can find inside of a cupcake, because cupcakes are tiny shitty cakes. That's what they are. Uh-huh.
That sells like $12 a pop.
Yeah.
And they have way too much frosting. Overhyped,
way too much icing, way too much everything. A cupcake is a shitty cake across the board. There's no cupcake you can find for which there isn't a better cake, right? That's just
Adam coming in hot.
So mm-hmm. I think Seth found the best thing to go into the inside of a cupcake.
That is true. I mean, almost any time I've gone to like a high end, boutique cupcake place where they're like, this place has cupcakes that'll blow your socks right off of your body.
What they mean is it'll blow your insulin right out of your body.
But I get it. Yeah. And it's like it's a little cake. Maybe an inch and a half tall, and then like 16 pounds of frosting on top.
And not good frosting. Like, because frosting can be really good if it's like, it's not overly sweet. If it's like, it can be really, it still is never good in that kind of quantity. That's just absurd. Yeah.
Like, how did we get here? Who's eating these? These sugar bombs?
I just honestly,
and how are they eating them?
I'm still confused by the distinction between a muffin and a cupcake, because in particular, my wife and I used to eat scones every morning on our morning, well, not every morning, but yes, as often as humanly possible on these walks.
The scone is a triangular.
That's the triangular muffin that we discussed a few episodes ago. So the question I have is like the distinction between a muffin and a cupcake, because they have a new one now, which is it's labeled as a muffin. Okay. It's a pumpkin cream filled muffin. So to be honest, like it tastes, it's basically the best cupcake I've had, to be honest with you.
Like, that's as far as it's not too sweet.
It's not too sweet. Yeah. It's just like, it's one of the things you can eat it and you're like, I want another one. Like it's that on that level where you're like, I just need more of this.
I think that's sort of like between cake and bread, right? Like cake, you have a little bit and you're like, I've already had too much. Bread, you can just eat forever. Just eat it indefinitely. If you find a line, because these are all on a gradient, right? So there's the bread cake gradient, which is also the muffin cupcake gradient. Same gradient, same idea. Mm-hmm. So, but a muffin actually is on the bread cake gradient, right? It's just like, it's just shifted kind of to the right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, it's more. So muffins are just out of the gate really fucking good, just like by default, because they're not too sweet, but they are sweet. But they got a lot of shit in there, like interesting stuff. So it's not just boring ass bread, So you're like, you're already in there. So if you just kind of like, if you start at that point and you kind of shift one way or the other a little bit and like spice things up, you like take a big leap. So if you're putting icing or whatever the fuck in the middle of that thing, like now all of a sudden you're doing interesting stuff, right?
Yeah.
You're kind of hitting all sides of the spectrum at once, but on average, right in the middle, which is really where you want to be.
But that's also the genius of the interior frosting, is that you can't overdo it like you can by putting frosting on top. There's only so much room in there, right?
Yeah, and muffin, you also can't just eat it by itself, because when there's icing on the top, you can't even eat that shit. It's just like a huge pile, So like you can eat the icing without eating the cupcake. But if it's in the middle, you're always eating both.
No, I will say, yes, one of the things I hate the most in this world is,
oh shit,
when you're eating a donut that's supposed to have stuff in it and you take a bite and there's no stuff in your bite. You
and then, I mean? And then eventually way off on one corner, there's like a tiny pocket the size of a pea.
Yeah. It's still all of the butthole. So you can tell somebody tried to inject it. Cause there's like the butthole with the stuff coming out, you know?
Yep.
But then, but then you bite over to it and there's nothing but the butthole.
Yep.
Yep. It's just a hole there.
It's terrible.
They missed it. It's worst.
Garbage.
Imagine though, because this trend, I'm calling it a trend. This trend of making cupcakes that are almost entirely comprised of frosting. Because cupcakes didn't used to be this way. You know, 15 years ago, you get a cupcake
wars that started.
I was going to say,
reality TV. I think it was. Reality TV, once again, creeping into the real world and distorting it into horrible ways.
Because a cupcake looks fucking awesome when it has like an insane, you know, top.
It looks cool.
It looks super cool. It looks way cooler than a normal cupcake. It's just not.
You can't eat it because you die.
They're just decorative.
Imagine if that trend carried over to donuts. Right, because like you get a donut and it has like that that little thin sheen of like chocolate icing.
Right, on they just piled it on,
and they're just like, "This is a chocolate donut," and it's like a donut, and then just like 6 pounds of just fucking chocolate frosting on top. Someday, Donut Wars is going to appear on the Food Network, and then it's over for donuts. And now donuts are ruined.
Yeah, it's really, I think, sort of the key takeaway of all of this. Is that whatever reality TV is doing, we need to quarantine that shit and keep it away from the real world.
Let it stay on TV.
Keep it away from having any impact on the real world.
There's a big rule here, which is in designing for games and for entertainment, which is entertainment trumps function every time. Which means if you can make something that looks super cool, but is definitely impaired because of that look, it will win in terms of – just, you know, the visuals of the thing, which is where cupcakes are at. It's probably where, frankly, any of this stuff on reality TV is going, you know, it's all about flash.
Reality TV is it's all flash and no substance.
Because the viewers can't taste the cupcake. All they know is it looks dope.
Exactly.
Right.
And they know it's expensive, which means it's good. You know?
Yeah. All right. Last question of the day comes from Fly Hoppy Axe Rampa. He's really just bringing home the question bacon today. He says, what office chairs do you guys use? My current one is on its last leg, and I want to buy a good one.
You're sitting on a one-legged chair?
That's a pogo stick, you maniac.
You got it.
That's probably good for your core strength.
Yeah, really great core strength.
Dude, if you're pogoing all day, I don't even know. I'm trying to think about this. How would you pogo and do your job at the same time? You know what I mean?
Well, people do that with those weird giant balls that they sit on.
Yeah, the ergonomic balls, basically the same thing.
I don't think they're ergonomic. I think they're just giant balls.
Yeah, it's just a ball. I like the idea, though, of just like having a ball and being like,
it's ergonomic.
I'm pretty sure that's how they like, they're like, it's better for you to sit in an office chair because you can roll around like a weirdo, you know?
The weird thing about the ball is that what's better about it is that you have to engage your core to stay upright. You know, which is really just no different than just standing, right?
Correct.
So my biggest game changer was getting the standing desk. It's the uplift desk that you can go to their website. You can customize. They have like all these different tiers of things you can do.
So you're saying like, why get a chair even, you know?
Just don't have one.
Yeah. I mean, you will need a chair because like I do sort of toggle back and forth between standing and sitting, usually like 3 or 4 times a day. I'll like sit for an hour, then stand for a couple hours and go back and forth. But my chair is just like a kind of hard, not that comfortable bungee chair.
Mm-hmm. I have the same one. It's an Office Depot Max.
But most importantly, it breathes. Because it's a bungee chair.
Yeah.
I used to have one of those like big old like leather, you know, back goes all the way up to your head thing. And that chair was just a heat trap. Yep. Like I was just broiling the whole time I was sitting
there. Yeah, you got a hot bod. You got to be careful which chair you get. So all of us have bungee chairs because you can't burn up in one of these things.
But my wife just got, she got her home office like really – schnazzied up over the past few months. And so she got a steel case chair, which is one of those fancy ass, like super ergonomic. It's like the one where you're like, you, it's like the one that people always want, I guess. Right. It's like,
is it one that looks funny? Like you look at it and it looks like it's like a bunch of weird parts trying to touch
it. It looks like a Mad Cat's controller.
It's a, it's like, it's very bendy, I guess, you know?
Yeah. But, it's got lots of curves and stuff.
There's a lot going on, but that's the whole idea. It's like, it's supposed to be, cause you need to like, you're trying to, unlike a ball. So like the hilarious thing about the ball is like, there's like, oh yeah, you just inflate a ball and you're done right now. We've made an ergonomic.
No, my favorite thing about the ball chair is that means your chair will just run away from you sometimes.
There's,
you
know, also that.
You stand up, your chair's just gone.
Yeah, but in terms of like effort to produce a thing that works well, you're just like, just inflate a ball, done, right? And then you go to like the steel case and you're like, we tried to understand the exact shape of a person's back and exactly how a person's back needs to be pushed forward or backward or whatever, and like how it should wrap around and like how high your arms should be and all this, and like everything about what it means to sit as like a physiological experience, right? And they try to design a chair around that. So I haven't gotten to sit in it because it's, you know, my wife's chair and it's like set up for
her. Here's my size, question. But you know, is it personalized? Like, did your wife have to do a like sit in a plaster mold of her backside?
No, it's not that personalized. And of course, because of, you know, the world we live in, which is a sexist universe, then everything is made for average man size. And so there are some she's had to make some adjustments, like put a pillow here and like, you know, that kind of stuff to get it to hit just right. But even still, she likes it a lot. And supposedly the answer to this question is, how much do you want to invest in your back? You know?
Yeah. Because of course, the more money you have, the better results you can get. Yeah. as with all things.
Yeah. Because if you get a standing desk and then one of these fancy ass chairs, I'm not advocating for Steelcase specifically, but I just know that everybody seems to love them. And I personally keep debating, like, do I take all this hard earned savings that I have and just like blow all of it on a fancy ass standing desk and a fancy ass chair, which will then make like 8 hours of my day almost every day a much better experience, right?
At least 8 hours.
At least. And the same with that, you know, we talked in the past about my bed air conditioner that I have, which was, you know, a sizable investment, but it's made literally every night a much better night for sleeping. But it's really hard to pull the trigger on those, you know? So I still haven't done my own. It's like, I'm in this shitty bungee chair. It's like, okay, I don't get hot, which is the main thing, but it's not necessarily comfortable exactly. Just on this like standard ass desk, nothing interesting going on.
Sitting all day.
And I know there are better alternatives, but man, they're expensive.
There's a cost. Yeah. I think the uplift desk that I ended up with, because you can customize in different ways.
Yeah.
I think the one I ended up with, I think, was like $800, which is actually kind of like on the middle end.
It gets high.
Yeah. Because I think they go down to maybe like $400 or something. Yeah, I think the cheapest if you like cut out all the features.
Yep.
But I was thinking about it. I was like, man, why is this thing so pricey? And then I got it and I was like, oh, I see. Because I was thinking about like, what does it take for this thing to – What's the engineering for this thing to function? Because it has to raise and lower two independent legs, mm-hmm. and they are 6 feet apart, and they have to be fucking exact. Because if one of them raises very slightly higher than the other, your whole desk is messed up. And so the thing is like, it's heavy. It's very heavy duty, and it has this little programmable computer thing, and so you can adjust it by a tenth of an inch. Just up and down, like wherever you need it. And then you can lock that in and be like, this is my setting number 3 or whatever. So I have 3 different settings. One is for when I'm sitting in my chair. Another is for if I'm standing without shoes on. Mm-hmm. And another is for if I'm standing with shoes on, because I get an extra, you know, half inch of height. And so like I have it all ergonomically just locked in. And I just feel great.
It was important to me with that. Is that there? It's a responsive enough mechanism that senses whether it's encountering resistance, which means that if I, for example, tell it to go down and then sit down and like am too far in to the desk so that it hits the chair, it doesn't like crush me into the floor.
Which it does feel like silly. It could. It feels like it has the strength.
It really does. Heavy. So I'm like, that was one of those things where I was like, that's what I need. I need
to. Yeah, you can, but you can take that shit to them. Like, I don't know what your guys' setup is, but I know Jenny's setup is pretty wild because she got, there's like an underhanging, what do we call it? Like a PC case holder, right? So that you can basically have your PC case goes up attached to the bottom of the desk. Mm-hmm. And she got one of the big desks too, so it's like very spacious. And then she has like a little tray and like a keyboard pullout, like the whole works, right? And so when that thing moves up and down, like everything. So in terms of dealing with like the fact that your cables are going to get fucked up, and in our case, because one of our cats kind of like lives in her office right now while we're still dealing with getting everybody to be nice to each other. And so there's not as much shit for him to get into because it's all up, right? And not up on a thing he can jump onto, but unlike my desk where there's just like cables on the floor and the cats are constantly eating them, you know? So there are clearly some advantages to having the whole everything move up, but the sky's the limit on pricing for an uplift desk.
Yeah. My thinking with it was just that because of, you know, this pandemic, maybe another year, maybe more, or maybe we're never going back to an office, you know, might just be working from home. And this is just now where I work. And on top of that, it's also where I play, you know, it's where I play video games and just do whatever. And so it's just worth it, you know. Even if I had to save up and take a healthy chunk out of my bank account to do it. So anyway, chair recommendation. I don't know. Bungee chairs are cool to keep you cool. That's why they're cool. Otherwise, I don't know.
Otherwise, try to not need a chair.
Yeah, stand as much as you can. All right. Well, I think that's all the time we have for this week. We would like to thank our producers, Fat Bard and Jen Coster, for putting the podcast together. And thanks to our community moderators who keep our Discord running. To get more involved in the Butterscotch community, just go to podcast.bscotch.net, where we have links to the Discord, a way for you to donate, and links to the archives. Thank you all for listening. We'll see you next week.
Goodbye.
Bye.